We play and call it work.
Hey everybody, Matthew here from AnywhereGaming.com, and welcome to this week's Sit and Talk featuring, well, yours truly. And the Sit and Talk, if you're not familiar with it, is a weekly show where we just answer your questions about anything. And we rotate who is actually going to be doing the Sit and Talks. And now that Josh has been here long enough, we're going to throw him into the rotation. So next week will be the first ever week that Josh is on a Sit and Talk. I'm not going to say by himself, because who knows what these guys end up doing anyways. But he'll be the keynote speaker. So if you have questions for him, then in the comments below, make sure you start your question with Josh, and that way we know you're talking to him. If you want to respond to things that I say today, then just put Matt or Matthew in the beginning of those so I know that you are talking to me. And if you're on YouTube, make sure you go to our site to leave the comments, because it's just easier for us to print them off. That's really the only reason why we do that. And we do half an hour for free and half an hour in the Mini Wargaming Vault at the link in the description below. So without further ado, let's jump right into the questions. Deity Matt. Dave said he would make the you versus him, Nids versus Chaos cupcake challenge happen. Have you accepted? Is this in the pipeline? Yes and yes. We actually scheduled a date. I think it is late May. It was the first time we actually found a time that would make sense for the two of us to take a day and make a cupcake challenge between Chaos and Tyranids. Good old-fashioned Chaos versus Tyranids. I don't think he's going to be doing like Corn Demonkin or anything, because just want to do like it's almost a bit of nostalgia using his original army versus my original army. So it should be interesting. That's the idea, at least. We'll see what happens when we actually get to the date. Machak, or Mac Hawk, that's probably what it is. He seemed to be a bit of a lore guy in 40K. But before I go any further, let me qualify that. I like the lore of 40K. I have read several of the Black Library books. I wouldn't consider myself an expert in the area, simply because how can you be an expert when you've only read like 5 to 10 of the 100+ books that are out there? I think I have a solid understanding of all the major players and the major events, but and I know where to look when I actually do want to do the research, and that's the 40K wiki, of course. Anyways, continuing. What, in your opinion, is the best thing Games Workshop has done in the lore? Some old lore that was scrapped or rewritten? And what is the worst thing Games Workshop has done? I'm assuming you mean in the lore, so we'll keep it to that. It's interesting, because when I first got into playing miniature war games, Warhammer was not one that I was really interested in, and it was actually because of the setting, I would say, or more like, well, let's put it this way. I was a huge fan of Lord of the Rings. Lord of the Rings miniatures game is the first one that I got into, and I liked just the, you know, for lack of a better word, the realistic feel of Lord of the Rings stuff. Not that orcs and trolls are realistic, but more just that they're not, well, the orcs in 40K, for example, are very goofy. Even in their current iteration, they started off even goofier, but it's just you don't have to take them seriously, whereas the orcs in Tolkien's orcs were more your traditional, just the bad guys are nasty and all that kind of stuff. And I liked that, and I didn't like the aesthetic of Warhammer at first. I didn't appreciate the gothic nature of it. I didn't like the religious symbolism and everything that happened, especially with the Imperium. But as I played more and more, and I got more into the game, and as I played other games as well, I realized, first off, you can't seem to escape the religious symbolism. Like, everybody has to use a cross on somebody and call them a Templar, or a knight, or something. We all seem to be stuck in the Dark Ages for even our futuristic lore, or our steampunk lore, or whatever we happen to be looking at. It just seems to be, and I can see why. In fact, when I went to London this past summer, and I saw the architecture there, I even went into Westminster Abbey, it dawned on me why Games Workshop really heavily favored that architecture and that feel. And it's because when you see it in real life, it's actually very awe-inspiring and very emotional. And so it's very easy to think, I want to do something fictional related to this. And so I get that now, because I grew up, obviously, in Canada, where we don't have that same kind of architecture, don't have that history, in a sense, that rich history, or just how long the history has been around. And so I can see how that kind of got into it. So, and on top of that, as I've read more and more of the lore, I don't appreciate necessarily just how dark 40K is, but I do appreciate how expansive it is. I enjoy the fact that it's a galaxy-wide conflict with a billion holes to be filled in the story. So I think what they've done right is to create a setting where pretty much you can make up your own story almost in any way. You want to stick to some level of the lore they've created just to give yourself some credibility in the story that you're creating. You don't want the Tyranids to all of a sudden start, you know, have a queen of blades and start being individualistic and all that. That would ruin them. Although you could do whatever you want, really, in your local group. But the fact that there's just, you could tell an infinite number of stories, and even the most epic ones, which cross hundreds of star systems, or thousands of star systems, you could make up an entire campaign where 1,000 star systems get sucked into the warp, and it's still a drop in the bucket compared to, well, the billions, hundreds of billions of worlds that are already out there. And I like that. I like how it's a very large scale and can be filled in that way. So it gives you a lot of artistic license. And they've created so much lore that you kind of have jumping points. That does create contradictions in the lore as well, but that's naturally what's going to happen when you have that many writers writing stuff over the course of over 30 years. You're just, you know, things are going to get retconned, things are going to get contradicted. And the fun thing is that they can just say, well, it wasn't actually a contradiction, it was just the bureaucracy getting it wrong. And not like Games Workshop bureaucracy, but like the Imperium. And they even have reasons why they could retcon something, and it turned out that that was what it was all along. So it's kind of cool. What's the worst thing Games Workshop has done with the lore? I don't know. I think that's actually their strong point. It's the one reason that I put up with the imbalanced or unbalanced and poorly written rules of 40K. The game, like, don't get me wrong, the game is fun. The mechanics allow for a good free-flowing game, but let's face it, it's pretty poorly written when it comes to resolving rules issues. And they're pretty silent on a lot of those matters. I know, like, recently they've been talking about doing FAQs, but that's like, well, duh, you should have been doing that all along. So what is the worst thing they've done with the lore? I can tell you, like, the things I don't like, and that's when things get a little too grotesque, which obviously the 40K can lend itself to with some of the chaos stuff, or heck, any of the races pretty much have an excuse to do that. So, but other than that, I know some people really hate when the Necrons got retconned, but I enjoyed the new Necrons, because before the Necrons were just another, they were just metallic Tyranids. And I like that they're more individualistic now. Not the individual Necrons, but more like the different Necron dynasties can kind of do their own thing. Flatfoot, Matt, would you rather fight one Steve-sized Ripper or 100 Ripper-sized Steves? Okay, first off, you have to actually know how big a Ripper actually is. Rippers are quite large. I know when you look at the little miniatures, but remember that they're not that big, but remember, they're not to scale. When you look at pictures of size comparisons of Rippers to humans, some of the larger ones like reach upwards of chest height. Those things are huge. And if you think about it, it makes sense, because they have to consume. They are the consuming organism of the Tyranids. They have to, after the Tyranids have destroyed most of the defenses, they'll unleash swarms of Rippers who will just go through and eat everything. So they have to be big if they're going to be able to eat a lot of biomass. And so really big ones, they're not as big as Steve, at least not height-wise, but if you look at the mass, and like if you kind of like fit it in there, it probably is actually a very similar size to a human being, or one the size of Steve. Now, let's assume that they're a little smaller. Would I want a Ripper, to fight a Ripper that's the size of Steve, or 100 Ripper-sized Steves? Well, that's easy. So it would be 100 Ripper-sized Steves, because I don't want to fight a Ripper, but fighting a Steve would be easy. All I have to do is like mention something disgusting, like start to, you know, scrape some flakes of dead skin off my arm and mix it with some mucus from my nose and just say the word mucus and then pretend to flick it at them, and all 100 of those Ripper-sized Steves would just pass out or start hurling all over the floor. It would be a pretty easy fight. So I'd say 100 Ripper-sized Steves, which is a weird question. I know it's been going around at the different sit and talks with different variations, so yeah. M. Tempest. Hi, Matt. Please put an out of order sign on the coffee machine and watch Chris start body slamming people. I don't think it would just be Chris. I think we'd have an uprising on our hands. I can think of several employees who, without their coffee, can get a little grouchy. So won't go through who, but Lee. Lord Red Panda. Very subtle, I know. Hey, Matt, first off, just joined the vault not too long ago and having a great time. Thank you, Lord Red Panda. Secondly, where do you have your custom dice made? Good question. Hey, Justin.
What?
Where do we get our dice made?
ChessX.
I should have known the answer to that. Justin takes care of it. Yeah, ChessX does a lot of dice products. Thirdly, I'm thinking of starting up Tyranids. What HQ would be the best to start with? I know some say Flying Hive Tyrants, but would a Swarm Lord or Trivergon be any better? If you're looking competitively, then yeah, Flying Hive Tyrant, two Twinly Devourers is by far the best cost to effectiveness ratio. The Trivergons are pretty good too. The problem with the Trivergon is if it's your only HQ slot, he can't actually get a Warlord trait, which is a pretty big deal because he's not a character. So technically you can't even make him your Warlord if there's another character present in your army. So that's not usually a huge issue because maybe you'll have like a Neurothrope on his own Thrope group and he's a character, or yeah, that's one of your few characters besides other HQ choices. So Flying High of Tyrant if you're going for most effective, but it really comes down to what it is that you're trying to build. Swarm Lord is okay. His problem is delivery. He's a little too slow. You can put him in a drop pod and a Tyrannocyte, but he can't charge when he comes out, and that's kind of his thing. All his good stuff is in close combat. Otherwise, he just gets gunned down. He's a good Psyker, but I don't know if that makes up for everything else. Trivergons, of course, are nice because they spawn more Trivergons, and they're also a little bit of a support Psyker. But if you're looking for most effective, Flying Hive Tyrant. Mark of Notch. Hey, Matt, I know you get a lot of requests to play against Dave with Tyranids versus Chaos, and that would be really awesome, but I'm wondering when are we going to see you two play Salamanders versus Sons of Horus? I want to see Vulcan versus Horus on the tabletop. Loving the 30k content so far. Keep up the good work. No plans. Part of me is not enthusiastic to do that because we both have green armies, so it would kind of on the table not be as cinematic. But the other part is just the same question of the two of us getting together for a game is often difficult. So no plans for that. Doesn't mean it won't happen. Just no plans. The Uninvisible Man. So the Visible Man? One. Matt, there was a dog in a recent bat rep. Was this an office dog, one of the staffs, or a guest? I was not aware of a dog. Anybody know why there's a dog in a battle report?
Sure. Which battle report was it?
It doesn't say. It just says there was a dog. Okay. Or were there themselves a guest there to challenge someone to game? Do you have any pets? Okay, so now I can answer the question because I don't know of a dog. Do you have any pets? I used to have a dog and a cat, but now I have 3.5 kids, so no pets. And not planning on having any for a long time, if ever. So what are they, if not? Have you had any? Answer that. I approve of more dog-based content. Please continue this trend. Okay. Bowser Delta. Matt, salutations, my good sir. I hope all is well at Mini Wargaming with you and your crew. I have a few questions I would like to ask you. One. Roughly, how much does it cost someone to do a quick weekend trip planned to film a few battle reports with Mini Wargaming? Obviously, airfare is easy enough to look up. However, I have no clue of nearby hotels or the cost to rent a car. Have really been wanting to come meet you all in film, but just don't know if it's in the budget. To be honest, I don't know the answer to that. I can try to piece together a few things, but it might be off. Like you said, airfare will vary widely depending on where you're coming from. And also, let's clarify, doing a weekend trip is not always the best idea unless you're only planning on coming in here for a day or two because we're closed on Sundays. So you could use the Sunday to go sightseeing in Niagara Falls. But I think hotels, they range anywhere from the cheap 60 or 70 buck hotels to up to a couple hundred dollars a night. I'd probably budget between like 100 and 150.
That's Western's 95 a night.
Yeah, so about $100. And a rental car? Those ones aren't too expensive if you're not driving too far. You can get them for, I don't know, 20 or 30 bucks a day plus gas. So, and then you have to eat. We feed you lunch, of course, while you're here, but you have to take care of breakfast and dinner. But you could do those cheap. So you could do the whole, besides airfare, the whole trip wouldn't have to cost you more than a few hundred dollars necessarily. But not that that's cheap for some people, but yeah, that would be my guess. But I really don't know 100%. Two, have you ever heard of an old internet TV show called Pure Pwnage? I've heard of it, but off the top of my head, I can't remember what it is. It actually had a 1-season, 10-episode series that aired in Canada. Just curious. Oh, it aired in Canada, so I definitely know who they are. Just joking. I don't. Three, and last, what is your stance on someone building a kit-bash model of the 30th anniversary Marine and using his rules versus actually owning the limited release model? I think that is perfectly 100% fine. Heck, I would even proxy a plasma gun for the disintegrator thing that he has. It's like stupid strength 5 AP2 instant death. What a dumb rule that is. Thankfully, you can only have one of them in your entire army. Yeah, I think they could have done better with the rules. The miniature's cool, but the rules are just kind of silly. Yeah, I've got this rapid fire weapon. Blah! Oh, you're dead. Everybody's dead. Not that it'll always get it off, because it's just a regular Marine, so there's obviously ways to counter it, but it just seems like a bit of a weak rule just to give something a good strength, a good AP, and instant death. But anyway. Grimjaw, Matt, if you could have any piece of Tau tech in real life, what would you choose and why? Keep up the great work. Huh. All the Tau tech that I'm aware of, because I haven't really delved tons into the Tau fluff, is more of their combat-related stuff. Although I could think of things like their battle suit, so I could kind of fly around. One piece of Tau tech. It's all combat-related. I'm not really in combat on a day-to-day basis. Maybe something to help me with my commute to work. It's like 7 minutes drive. That's too long. So if I could get something, one of their piranhas. I would take that and drive it to work, because then I could just fly over all the other traffic and get there very quickly, because it's fast. It's actually fast. Avolf, Matt, love the new narrative campaigns. I am currently in my free time writing a Who Would Win program that should have all or most of 40K's rules. If it ever works, would you want me to send it to you? Love the content. I am not exactly sure what you mean by writing a Who Would Win program. Do you mean like a computer program? And then you'd put two miniatures in and it would calculate who would win? Or do you mean that it's a program like you're writing rules for a Who Would Win campaign? So I'm not exactly sure what you mean by that. If it's a computer program, obviously a lot of the Who Would Wins we do doesn't really express who would win, because dice rolls can change. And also, you can't compare two things in a vacuum. It's just fun to do it. It's like, who beats up who in a one-on-one match? Well, often things don't happen in one-on-one matches, but it's fun to kind of get an idea. All right. Illich Nightspear, good day from Australia. I love watching all of your content, and it's been really great to see your company grow from a side project into a fun-filled nerd fest that it is today. Thank you. My question is, could you be persuaded to make a Heralds of Ruin Kill Team Bat Rep series? Since they look pretty quick to make compared to something like the 2000-point 40K battle reports, and they were really fun to watch back when you played with John and his Red Orcs in 2014. I use the Heralds of Ruin Kill Team rules quite a bit, actually. In our Deathwatch campaign, for example, we used the Heralds of Ruin Kill Team rules. Now, we didn't use their campaign rules, nor did we use like the rules for the models that they have in there, but we used more like the movement, shooting, psychic, assault rules, how they modify 40K. To answer your question, I don't know. Probably not, unless it's something just every once in a while, just as a special. But we love using those rules as kind of a starting point for other things. Like Gorka Morka that we're filming right now, we borrow a few of the rules from Kill Team, Heralds of Ruin Kill Team, such as just running. Rather than rolling a d6 to run, you just run your full distance. And just things like redirecting charges when you kill something. They're really good for playing smaller points battles. All right, that one's for Steve. Mentality, hey, M, looks like you filled your picture frame up. I did. Can we take a closer peek? Sure. It's not too out of date now. I'm just gonna do this right there. So in the middle is my daughter, Abigail. To the right is, of course, me and my wife. And to the left is my two little kids. And the same thing at the bottom with my wife. At the top is my youngest, Lizzie. Me. So that's my family. I'll have to update it soon because we'll have a fourth in September. So I'll probably have it updated in the next couple of years. Typically is what happens with picture frames. Daniel TMU, Steve and Josh need to bring back the reroll. Watch their most recent sit and vault, at least the last 10 minutes or so, and you will see why. Anyone else who can make it from week to week could be there to fill out the cast with the two of them as the hosts of the show. Please make this happen for us, Matt. Do it for us. It was a great show. The reason they're not doing it right now is not because it wasn't a well-received show. It's simply because of time, that we're covering so many games, and Steve and Josh are actually pretty pivotal to that. Josh covers the most games, and so he's often helping Quirk to fill in the X-Wing and War Machine battle reports where he's not able to find opponents, and then he helps Steve do the fantasy in Age of Sigmar when Steve can't get enough opponents, and then he participates in narrative campaigns, such as the Gorka Morka one that we are now filming. So, and then on top of that, Steve usually has almost always 4 to 5 days of filming every single week for battle reports. And so it's hard to find time for that, those kind of shows. And we just introduced a new show, the Rules You Got Wrong series, so that's going to kind of fill in some other time. So it wouldn't be impossible to do, it would just be hard to do it regularly. And I don't like doing something unless we're going to do it regularly, because it's just so much better when people can expect when it's coming out. So for now, going to have to say no, but hopefully as our staff grows and it frees up more time, because I don't necessarily want to put out more and more videos. Like we're definitely not at the ceiling level of how many videos we should be putting out, but we're also not too far from it. And so when we get there, then you can kind of pull back, kind of like what we have done in a lot of ways. We spend more time filming each thing now. Like 40K Battle Reports are a good example. We used to film two a day, and now we only film one. Same thing with 30K. But Fantasy and War Machine and X-Wing, we still try to get those done two in a day, just because we won't have time to film everything if we don't. So as time goes on and we expand and we get more manpower, then we're able to spend more time on each individual thing. So that might be when we could look at that show again. Fleshcraft. Was Leland's Ad Mech army a studio army? Yes, it was. Because we never see Skitarii in bat reps since Leland left. Nobody's really claimed them and wanted to play them. Now, Josh is somewhat interested in them, but he, once again, same thing. He's very busy with other stuff. And also, he started Mechanicum for 30K. So they're there. It's not that they'll never be used, but I wouldn't expect to see them very often. I think they are nice as an ally for most of the Imperial armies and would be nice, bring more variety to your battle reports. That's talking about variety for a second, because we were having some comments in the forum about this, the vault members only area for the forum, and I was chatting back and forth with a few vault members. One person had basically said, I wish you had more variety. I don't watch your 30K stuff, so it feels like there's not a lot of 40K, because now it's basically one day a week, because now narrative campaigns take up a slot. Whenever we can, 30K takes up a slot, and then we have 40K. And then on top of that, when you watch the 40K, it's the same relative mix of armies. We do have guests that come in and play different things, but we still play, we cover most of the armies. It's just that we tend to favor certain ones. And I replied saying that I totally got that. We've always had this complaint. No matter how much or how little we do, this will always come up. People always want more variety, and I get that. I totally do. I remember getting into Lord of the Rings back when I started in this hobby, and I got the White Dwarf, and the White Dwarf was packed with content back then, but most of it was 40K and fantasy, and very little was Lord of the Rings. So to me, the White Dwarf was a lot less valuable because it only had an article or two about Lord of the Rings. So I get the idea, the notion of a company putting out lots of content, but if you don't care about a lot of it, it doesn't feel like they're putting out a lot of content. I totally understand that. But over the years, we've realized that we just can't possibly please everybody. We can't possibly cover everything. One of the real reasons why I don't like to cover everything is because it stretches our knowledge too far, in that we become jack of all trades, master of none. We can kind of see that with the guys who play lots of different games. It's a lot easier to carry over mistakes from one game to another. Even just wording and verbiage, I often hear the guys using verbiage from a different game applying it to the other game that they're playing because they're familiar with that, or even seeing they might mix up between gaming systems. There's only so much that your brain is able to retrieve, and when you play a lot of different games, and then within each of those games you play a lot of different factions, and within each of those factions there's a complex set of rules, it just becomes even harder to get the basic rules straight. And so we have to kind of find a fine balance. We want variety. Like I play, over the years, now Tyranids, Space Marines, Necrons, Tau. I've dabbled with other armies as well, so I have a cursory knowledge of a lot of the other ones. But just saying, well, just ally in some Admech. The Admech are actually quite a complicated army with all of their convocations and stuff. And you have to remember to do all that stuff. Plus, if you're playing Space Marines, then you got your doctrines usually. And it's just a lot to remember. And to be honest, a lot of it won't be remembered. So I get it. I get that you want variety, and I understand why, and I wish that we could give that. One day when we have 30 employees covering a couple different armies each and being experts on each of those, then we'll be able to have a lot of that variety. And you know what? Even then, I could guess that people would still complain that we don't do enough variety because really you see only what you want to see. You can see this big list of content that we're creating. But if there's only a couple things that you're interested in, then, like if we start doing, let's say we started putting out 4 battle reports a day for 40K, forget whether they're free or vault, just that you have access to 4 a day. and we're covering all the different armies. Well, if then once you realize that you have this huge selection, you'll start being picky. Not you, like you in general. Like this is what happens when we have a lot to choose from. We get pickier, and we say, well, I only want to see the ones that have Tyranids in them. Then all of a sudden, when you look at that huge amount of content, and it's like Tyranid, 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 you see a small percentage of the content actually being what you even want to watch. And then you'll post a comment saying, I wish there was more Tyranid content. And we're like, oh, shoot, people want more Tyranid content. But really, it's just everybody wants the exact content that they're going to get, which is why we froth at the mouth when a good movie comes out, because how often do good movies come out or a good book comes out? Like, we're quick to share all those good computer games and good entertainment because most entertainment that comes out isn't good or isn't our taste, because I'm sure there's tons of good movies that come out, but to me, I wouldn't care to watch them because they're not in my taste. So just kind of say that we do our best for variety. I don't feel pressured or insulted or anything by anybody saying that they want more variety. I totally get it. But really what it comes down to, and this is something else I posted on the forum. And so as we've developed over the years, we've just decided that we just have to do what we want to do. When it comes to narrative campaigns, when it comes to planar armies, we have to be excited for it. When we started 30K, I talked to all the guys and I wanted them to choose their armies. And even though it wasn't this perfect 50-50 split of traitors and loyalists, it was what they wanted to play, and that was important. Now, there's always going to be restrictions, like everybody can't choose the same army. In fact, in that case, no two people could choose the same army. And when people just play 40K here, they're kind of limited because we have so many armies there, so they're going to have to choose between them. But it still wants them to choose which ones they'd be most interested in, because that'll come across the best. They'll learn it better, they'll be more excited, and that'll make better videos. So, yeah. It's tough. Johnny Bex, hey Matt, we were looking back through some of your old videos on YouTube and came across your open letter to Games Workshop. So some of the points you raised made us look at the current situation regarding Age of Sigmar and its pricing. We were hoping to hear your opinion on Games Workshop's rather large pricing on Age of Sigmar models, considering AOS is an attempt to garner new interest and new players to the hobby. It's pretty steeply priced. For example, here in New Zealand, it costs around $180 for 3 Gore Chosen Champions, or $116 for 3 Sigmarines with wings. It seems to us they are pricing people out of the hobby. Thanks, regards, John and Bex. It's tough to say, because price is where customers are always going to get the most upset with almost any company, because the companies know more than the customer does about what they should set their price to. Now, should Games Workshop have their prices that high? You know what? I have no idea. I have no idea. We all want things to be cheaper than they are, and we say that that'll get more people into the hobby, but the fact of the matter with economics, lowering prices does not always increase your bottom line. In fact, the basic structure of supply and demand is that, of course, as you lower the price of your products, then theoretically more people will buy your products, and that sounds like a good idea because it gets more customers into it. Something like wargaming, that's very important. In most products, it's important because you want that social, social proof. Where, you know, if I look around and I'm about to buy a smartphone for the first time and I notice that all my friends have iPhones, I'm much more likely to buy an iPhone. But when it comes to wargaming, that becomes even more important because you need players to play against. At least with an iPhone, sure, if some 2 people have iPhones, and it's easier for them to airdrop stuff to each other and they got iMessage. But let's face it, I can text anybody with a smartphone, even one that's antiquated. And so I could get away with not having that. With wargaming, if you don't have another 40K player near you, you're not likely going to be playing much 40K. And so there is an argument there to lower prices, have more people, and even though you don't make as much per person, that you kind of hit that critical point, that critical mass of having enough players that then you can get even more players than you would have before, theoretically. But the basic structure is you lower prices, you get more customers, and there's a cross. As prices go up, demand goes down because less people are going to want to buy it. And the other one is, as supply goes up, demand goes down because, well, if there's so much of it, then there's just not enough people to buy it all. And those two graphs, basically, in a very, very simplistic economic environment, go like this, where you want to get, you want to find that cross point where you drop the price to that point where you make the most profit per person and still have as many customers as possible. For a very simple example would be if I had a widget that I sold for $100, and right now I was selling it to 100 customers every single year, And then I did my research and I dropped the price to $50. Well, if I doubled the number of customers that I have, then I haven't really, I've actually probably lost money because the cost for making a widget is going to be the same. And now I'm selling more of them. I have to put out 200 of them to get the same amount of revenue. And so dropping your price in half and doubling your customers sounds like a great thing, right? If Games Workshop could double their customers by dropping their price in half, you'd think, well, that would be awesome, but it wouldn't. It would actually probably cause them serious financial problems. And so let's say I take that $100 and I drop it to 75, and I increase it by a certain percentage that when I put those back together, I end up with a better bottom line. Like, revenue isn't everything, obviously, it's profits. On the contrary, if I take that $100 and I double it to 200, and I lose half my customers, just half, I'll actually have made money because I'll be getting the same amount of revenue, so $200 with 50 customers as the same as $100 with 100 customers, but my cost for making each widget is probably the same, and therefore I will have a better bottom line. So you can kind of see Games Workshop is doing that. They spent their first while building up their customer base, and now they've been racking up the prices, which probably makes it has been really helping their bottom line. That's not something that you can do indefinitely. There's a sweet spot. But in the end, Games Workshop is a quasi-monopoly in this market, not because they're the biggest, but because they're the only ones that sell their products. There's nobody they're competing against for their products. And that's an important distinction. People can't, like yes, there's companies that will try to make compatible products with it, like Mantic, for example. They started off by really, really pushing that they would make, they would do what Games Workshop was doing, but the miniatures would be cheaper. That was their whole thing. And there's always room in the market for a cheap brand. I'm not saying that Mantic stuff is not as good, although I actually don't think it's as good, but that's not the point. They could be just as good or better, but their whole business model is a replacement. And so that's a competitor to Games Workshop. For the most part, though, you can't say Privateer Press is a direct competitor, because while they do take Wargamers away from them, Privateer Press can't sell Warhammer products. And so it's a little more complicated than just saying, yeah, there's competition. Because there is, of course. Because if somebody leaves 40K to go and play War Machine, then yeah, Games Workshop has lost money. But somebody could also play 40K and play War Machine, and both sides can make money right there. And so, yeah, let's just put it that way. It's a complicated economics discussion. And the fact of the matter is nobody knows those numbers better than the company who does it themselves. They can raise their prices and then they can watch their numbers. And we can only see a bit from the outside, see some of their financial reports, and we can try to make educated guesses based off of what they report. But in the end, they're the ones that have to decide whether that's the best for the company or not. So I don't have an opinion at all whether they should drop it or not. All I would have an opinion on is if I were to sell my own miniatures, what price I should set them at to try to acquire as many customers as possible. And it would be a completely different strategy than Games Workshop's because I'd be starting out. I wouldn't be a well-established brand. Thank you for all your questions. I'm going to continue in the vault for another 30 minutes. There'll be a link in the video description below. You can click that, of course, if you're not a vault member. Get a free 7-day trial and get instant access to that. And don't forget, next week's guest will be Josh. So leave your questions below for him. Thanks for watching. Happy wargaming. And I'll see you in the vault.